Testing. If you're in Adobe Connect, can you hear us right now? Adobe Connect, can you hear us right now if you're in Adobe land?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. Thank you. Just so you know, we're waiting for a couple more of our panelists, but we'll begin hopefully momentarily. Welcome. Thanks for coming. Good afternoon. Can we begin recording, please? Thank you. All right. Thanks for coming. Today we're here to talk about the privacy and proxy accreditation program that was envisioned as part of the negotiations that are ongoing right now related to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. We've got a great panel of people here to talk about sort of their perspective and their opinions on the program and about proxies and privacy services, some of their experiences with those. I'm going to introduce the panel in a minute. My name is Mike Zupke. I'm the Director of Registrar Programs on ICANN staff. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of just background about how privacy and proxy services work, and then we'll get into the real reason why you're here to hear the discussion about how the accreditation program should evolve. So, I think probably most people in this room know a thing or two about domain names, so I'll try not to get too elementary. But, the privacy and proxy services that we're talking about are who is privacy and who is proxy services, and they were born out of the marketplace because there were people who felt they didn't want their contact details to be published in Whois. And it's not necessarily just individuals. It also could be corporations who were perhaps launching a product that they don't want made public. But oftentimes it was for individuals, and it was just, basically privacy concerns. So, there are proxy services and there are privacy services, and sometimes people use the terms interchangeably. But there is actually a difference, and probably James of GoDaddy will correct me if I if I get this wrong. But generally, the idea is a proxy is a registrant who licenses use of the domain name to another person, who we call sometimes a licensee, or the beneficial user, or the beneficial registrant, or some people say the real registrant. But it's not the registered name holder. The proxy is the registered name holder. In a privacy service, the registered name holder is still the customer, and they've only changed the contact data. So here's just a little bit of information about proxy services. The general idea is if you as a consumer decide you want to use a domain proxy service, basically employ this third party, usually a company, to be your proxy. And then when they get information or correspondence that comes to them because of their contact details and Whois, they would generally forward that to you. And right now, there's some inconsistency in the marketplace about how that information gets forwarded. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. And, when we talk about proxies, it's easy to think about the registrar when you apply for a domain name or you want to register a domain name. The registrar offers you a proxy service, but there are other kinds of proxies as well. It could be a proxy service that is in a company that's affiliated with the registrar. It could be a reseller, a web host. There could be a standalone proxy business, which I don't think is particularly common. It could be an attorney who's registering a domain name for a client. It could be a broker, usually on the secondary market, who is purchasing a domain name for a client that, oftentimes this might be for business purposes where they wish to keep their business plan sort of secret until the official launch. There could also be family members. If you've got a parent or a child who is doing something on the web but isn't quite ready to register the domain name or isn't quite tech savvy enough to manage that, you can do that, and then you're basically the proxy. And we'll talk in a minute about what we're talking about in the accreditation program for proxies, but I just want to point out now that when we talk about proxy accreditation, we're not necessarily talking about everything on this list. For example, we're not trying to regulate your children or your parents necessarily, unless they are pretty sophisticated in selling, proxies to a lot of people. And then, as I mentioned, there's the privacy service. In a privacy service, typically, those are usually run by the registrar itself. Where a proxy, the registrar cannot be the proxy because the registrar and the registered name holder can't have a registration agreement between themselves because it's one person. But in the case of a privacy service, the end customer can sign up for a domain name and still be the registrant or the official registered name holder, but the Whois contact details are actually provided by the registrar or some information that's provided by whoever the privacy service is. And then typically, like with a proxy, your correspondence should be forwarded to you when it comes from third parties. So I thought before we get into this, I just want to kind of give you a little bit of a status of where we are and how we got here. We're, as I mentioned, we're in the process of negotiating amendments to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, which we also call the RAA. And hopefully it won't be too confusing that we're talking about accreditation of proxy services when we also accredit registrars, and we'll try to be clear about that. But this is kind of a statement of what the current, the 2009 version of the registrar accreditation agreement says about proxies. We have provision 3.7.7.3, which in some form has existed since 1999, but was amended for the 2009 agreement. And that basically says that registrars must include in their registration agreement a provision that tells that registered name holder that if it is licensing use of its domain name to another party, there's a certain responsibility for the behavior or the actions that accompany that domain name. So in essence, the registered name holder is responsible unless, when presented with reasonable evidence of actionable harm, it will disclose who the underlying customer is and their contact details. The other two provisions that are in the 2009 version, the RAA, are really concerned with the data escrow program. Before we had these provisions, there was no obligation for a registrar to escrow registration data of the underlying customer. So in the event a registrar failed, you could conceivably have a file, the data escrow file, contained nothing but the proxy service. And that's not particularly helpful if the proxy service was also the registrar. So we wanted to encourage registrars to also escrow the underlying customer data, and being cognizant that there might be reasons why a registrar might not want to do that or why a registrant might not want to do that. It's basically offered as a requirement or a requirement for disclosure. So the registrar must either deposit the underlying customer data or disclose conspicuously to its customer that it's not doing so. And then there's a similar requirement for resellers, and the only real difference there is that resellers don't necessarily have to escrow the data. They could just give it to the registrar. So here's what we're talking about today. I sort of tried to break out this into really basic components of the discussion that we are having staff and registrars right now. I think this first bullet point we're generally in agreement on, and what it says is that we'll put a provision in the accreditation agreement. It's sort of like a placeholder. It says that when there is a proxy accreditation program, registrars will only knowingly accept proxy registrations from accredited proxies, and the same for privacy services. The nuance in this is where we're still kind of discussing, and that's how do we get to this accreditation program. So, what the ICANN draft of the agreement that was posted before Prague says, it could be through a consensus process, it could be through just contractual negotiation and hardwired into the accreditation agreement, or it could be a program which is commercially reasonable that is takes place in consultation with registrars. And, from our perspective, we'd want to involve other stakeholders in that too. But that's for the registrar's sake that they would want consultation there. So we've heard a lot of people today and earlier say, there's a right way to do this process and there's other ways to do the process. And we've heard both sides of this. We've heard some people say this really should be done by PDP. We've heard other people say, hardwire this into the contract because that's the fastest way to get it done, and that's how we want it. The staff perspective on this is, we don't really know exactly how this is going to evolve. We want to see what's the substance of this program going to look like, and then we can make a decision about what's the best path forward. So I've talked to the panelists about this, and I've asked them to try to help us focus on substance because from my perspective and from the others of us on staff, this is a listening experience for us. We want to hear what it is that the community expects will be included in this program, and as I said, that will also help inform the decision about how to go forward in terms of implementing it. So I'll stop there. Were there any questions? And I hope I wasn't talking too fast. I tend to do that. Okay, excellent. We have a well-educated crowd. So let me just introduce our panelists here. We have a really great, diverse group. I'll start here on the end. We've got Bobby Flame, who comes to us from the FBI. We've got Wendy Seltzer, who is a member of the NCUC and also a founder of the Chilling Effects Clearinghouse. Very interesting stuff there. We've got Steve Metallitz, who comes from IPC and is also an intellectual property attorney. And we've got Susan Kawaguchi, and she comes to us from Facebook, and she also was a member of the Who Is Review team, and so we asked her if she could sort of maybe kind of put two hats on and tell us a little bit about her experience at Facebook and also a little bit about what she experienced as part of the review team. And finally, we've got James Bladel, who comes to us from GoDaddy, and he also was a member of the Who Is Review team, so hopefully you'll be able to sort of add some color from that experience too. So to sort of kick this off, I thought, you know, why don't we just sort of start with the why? Why are we doing this? You know, maybe Bobby, you can kind of give us some idea about what is it that the law enforcement community hopes will come from this?
Thank you. I think what we're hoping come from this is part of the recommendations that we had put forth about 3 years ago was all about due diligence, transparency, and the who is. And part of the recommendations concerning the proxy and privacy registrations and making sure they were accredited was to make sure that they fall within the ICANN system of the due diligence accreditation, ensuring that they are legitimate organizations, that they are falling within the RAA and kind of falling within the whole framework of ICANN, to make sure that if law enforcement needs to get information through legal process, we know exactly where to go and who we're dealing with. A lot of the proxy and privacy registrations are being offered now by the registrars, and that has worked out well. So we want to extend that over to ensure that the whole landscape is on an equal and level playing field, so that when there is a privacy or proxy registration, we know exactly who to go to, we know exactly who to serve our legal process to, and we know exactly who the players are. So that's kind of the thought process behind that. And why we had put that in our recommendations. So is that?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So, you know, maybe you could sort of tell us how exactly you see that playing out in the day-to-day interaction that you'll have with registrants or licensees. How do you see this benefiting you specifically, or benefiting people in your community fairly specifically?
The benefit is we know who the actors are. Like I said already, we know who some of them are. But again, it's to have established criteria on who's offering these services, and to make sure that ICANN knows who they are and they're within the ecosystem. So for us, the benefit would be, you know, legal process. Who are we dealing with? Are they vetted out? Are they legitimate agencies? Does ICANN know who they are? Do they have a license? Do they have a business license? Are they, you know, semi, quote-unquote, accredited? So who are they, you know, and where will ICANN's reach be if they are not complying with ICANN rules and regulations such as the registrars are right now? It's because it is a very big portion of the domain name industry and how registrants register domain names. Again, we just want to make sure there's the due diligence and the transparency and accountability.
So I should say, you know, I would like to encourage the panelists to talk amongst themselves. You don't have to wait for me to ask a question. So I see Steve is willing to jump in, so please go ahead.
Thank you, Mike. I think it's worth putting just a little bit more context here. I think you gave a very good introduction and the distinction between privacy and proxy services. But the study that ICANN commissioned from the from NORC about 4 or 5 years ago really is one of our best pieces of data on this, and it showed that about 20%, 18 to 20% of all registrations in the GTLDs are proxy or privacy registrations, mostly proxy. That's 20% of a very large number. At that time, it was 100 million, a lot more now. If .proxy were a TLD, it would be the second largest GTLD in the world. So we have this vast universe of registrations where the goal of who is, which is to, among other things, allow people to know who they're dealing with online and enable contact with the operators of online resources, is failing in those areas because that information is not accessible to the public and who is. And then the provisions that you mentioned, 3.7, 0.7, 0.3, which is intended to provide a path to finding out that information when the registration is being misused, is not working. It works sometimes. It works. It varies from provider to provider. But there really aren't any the kind of path, that clear path that Bobby's talking about, really doesn't exist. So our view, just to make it clear, we support the use of proxy services. Although it's interesting, there are some CCTLDs that don't allow them, and that might be worth exploring too. But and the vast majority of proxy registrants, I'm confident, are perfectly legitimate and are using the registrations in a perfectly legitimate way. But we also have evidence, and I think common sense would tell us, that people who are up to bad things, including but not limited to theft of intellectual property, are disproportionately likely to use proxy registration because it allows them to hide who they are and to frustrate the accountability and transparency that Whois provide. So that's the status quo, and that's why we're glad to see motion toward trying to resolve that status quo and put some, you know, it's a Wild West situation there in the proxy universe, in .proxy, and we are really eager to see some rules of the road put into place that would benefit law enforcement, would benefit intellectual property owners, would benefit the public, which is also really ultimately the beneficiary of public access to Whois. So I just wanted to add that additional context because this is not a small isolated problem. This is a huge part of the GTLD universe.
Thanks, Steve. It looks like Wendy is dying to jump in here.
Thanks, and given past discussions we've had of the subject, it will likely not surprise anyone that I disagree. Basically, from the start, the notion that we should be accrediting proxy and privacy providers, and the purpose of the Whois, and the rationale for ICANN to do that. I think this proposal is a dramatic extension of ICANN's contractual web to include oversight of another class of parties, beyond the registries and registrars, to a potentially large number of providers. Now, when you said you didn't plan to accredit the parents and the attorneys, or at least not the parents, if you don't demand that all of them be accredited, where do we draw the line? And if there's a line, we know that the bad actors will find their way to the other side of the line. So it's not clear to me how this solves a problem that we have. And I think we have to seriously consider the costs of adding yet another accreditation program to ICANN's mandate, the costs both in dollars of developing and administering and overseeing the compliance, but more important, perhaps, the cost of dilution of attention for the organization as it has to expand its staffing and its mission to cover oversight of yet another piece of the internet content landscape, which is really getting pretty far from the registration in a database of a domain name. Lots of the complaints that would be made against privacy and proxy services won't be ones that can be determined, does a zone file validate? So I think that's a huge cost that ultimately falls on the domain registering public, because that's where most of the money comes into the system from. That means it's harder for individuals and nonprofit associations to register and use domain names as pointers to their online speech.
Thanks, Wendy. So one of the things I think that has sort of driven this this concept or this potential accreditation program is really it's the interest of law enforcement, it's the interest of people who are enforcing intellectual property rights. But one of the things that I think could also be an outcome of this is enhanced consumer protections. And I'm wondering if that's sort of, you know, how would you balance that equation?
So I hear intellectual property posited as a consumer protection often. In practice, I think that there's more of a gap. And I don't think consumer protection is a mandate of the DNS. There are plenty of other places to protect consumers. When we ask, when studies have asked consumers, do they even know about the Whois as a place to find information, most of them don't. The Whois is poorly suited as a business lookup database. If you're asking should I do business with a website? There are better ways for you to determine that information. And if you're trying to protect consumers against bad actors using the Internet, there are better ways to get at them than through Whois information.
So I appreciate that. I probably didn't word my question very clearly. I was thinking more about the actual users of the privacy or proxy services who are maybe experiencing sort of inconsistent treatment across registrars. So, for example, one registrar might be particularly agreeable to demands that come in to reveal the identity of the underlying user, where others might be a little bit more challenging of those sorts of requests. And so there is a potential in doing this program to at least have some consistency or some strengthening of or aligning consumer expectations with practices that go on.
I would suggest that consumers are more benefited by the availability of a variety of different programs with different offers and different contours, that some of the services offered for free may be worth as much as people pay for them. Others of them may be ones that come with guarantees of we will only reveal your information in response to a court order. And I think that then there are third parties, Electronic Frontier Foundation and other rights organizations who can help to aggregate information about where the best and less good places to get privacy and proxy services might be. I don't think that's ICANN's role.
Okay. Hey, James, I was just going to ask you a question. Thanks. But go ahead, please.
You're going to ask me a question?
I was.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you.
I might cover it here, but.
As a representative of a registrar, you're probably in a really good position to see sort of how consumers' expectations align with the actual service and, you know, whether there are areas, where that could be improved or enhanced or, you know, how you see it in the marketplace.
Yeah, so certainly from a consumer's perspective that paid for a privacy service, every reveal is a failure of customer service on their part. Anytime that we actually send them information or even relay a contact that they were not expecting or asking for, in some respects could be considered a diminishment of the value of what they believe they paid for, which is to some protections against those types of things. So I just wanted to kind of touch back and circle back. I'm wearing three hats today. I'm obviously with GoDaddy, which is a registrar, and then we have an affiliated proxy services provider, which is a domains by proxy. I don't think we've been secret about that. It's a very popular service. Also a member, former member, alumni. What are we calling ourselves? The artist formerly known as the Whois Review Team. So, just circling back, I think, to the beginning, as Steve mentioned, these are very popular services, ours in particular. We're very proud of the service. And I think what that tells you is that this is meeting a need, that this is solving a problem that is perceived in the marketplace, that someone's willing to step up and open their wallet, for an optional service like this at the level that we're seeing. It indicates that there is a general concern about exposing personal data onto public databases which have no access controls or restrictions on use. We are participating in this program for a couple of reasons. One, I like to think that we are a fairly good actor in this space. I think that my friends from the IPC would probably back up at least part of that statement, that we have put in some rules of the road. It may only apply to us at this time, but we're willing to share those practices and disseminate them throughout the community and throughout this industry. I think it raises an interesting point. You know, you asked me not to go there, but where's the authority coming from to do this? I think that's an interesting point. I think, ICANN is not a government. It can't go out and bring somebody under its umbrella. Everyone who comes to ICANN submits to it willingly for the perceived benefits. So we want to make sure that there are benefits to privacy and proxy providers to becoming accredited, that it's opening up new markets for them, that it's putting them in touch with customers or products or providers that they wouldn't otherwise have access to. My fear, same thing when we say it was a registrar. We're trying to put more daylight between us and the bad actors that Bobby's talking about. You know, I hear this every ICANN meeting. Registrars, proxy service, not you guys. Not you guys, though. you guys are good guys, but you know, but yet we're painted with the same brush whenever we kind of go after the bad guys. My concern is that this will be more of the same, that the good guys will step up, will implement the accreditation, will apply for accreditation, and will follow whatever prescriptions come out of the accreditation program, and will pass those along to their customers. And the bad guys will say, you know, it's not for me. I'm a bad guy proxy service. I'm not going to bother with accreditation. And we will kind of add some structure or some concrete to the status quo. And that's my concern. But again, we're willing to participate. We're coming here to say we have, I think, the answer to what a good proxy service looks like. We have the blueprint for an accreditation program, and we want to share it. We're not guarding this. We're not treating this as a secret sauce. we're not selling this. We want to give this away. So.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. And I was hoping maybe, Susan, you could talk about your experience with the good and the bad, as a sort of a reverse user of proxy services.
So I agree with James in GoDaddy. They have a well-defined process. I know what to expect. I know where I can use my trademark registrations and receive information. I try not to make requests that they can't fulfill, to put them in a position where they have to say no to me. So I do an evaluation, look at the site, look at the domain registration. If Facebook is not in the domain name, but there's Facebook content and use of unauthorized use of trademarks on the site, then I don't go and it is a domains by proxy registration, I do not look to them to provide information to me. So I think they have set up a very well sort of standardized process. What isn't happening across the board in all proxy providers is the definitions that you laid out here on proxy and privacy. There's no one's really adhering to those definitions, and they're not clear cut. So you'll have a privacy service that looks very much like a proxy service, and vice versa. So the definitions have to be very well laid out, and the expectations for those two services, because I do think they are two distinct services. I also think we need to step back a little bit and think about why people and when people should be able to use, or entities should be able to use, a proxy service. You know, there are many legitimate reasons, and free speech, you know, we don't all have the same rights in each country. I believe in that you should be able to have a proxy registration and not have your details divulged. What I do not agree with is if there's any sort of e-commerce, any sort of collection of money, an ad, if it's a site making any sort of money, then at least in the U.S., if you go downtown and go into a store, there's you're talking to a person, a representative of that company, and you're also seeing a business license on the wall. You know who to contact if you have a problem. But to me, there is no legitimate use of a proxy for a business online. They should just not be allowed. To me, it's a bright line, it's a distinct line, and it shouldn't be crossed. So, I think we need to start out with some very basic elements and decide as a community the standards for this.
So I'm wondering, Steve, as an intellectual property attorney, if you sort of had a different thought on that.
Well, I think I just want to respond to one thing James said, which was about the possible unintended consequences of this and setting the current situation in concrete. It's a little hard to get my mind around that image of this chaos becoming concrete, but I think the idea, as you put it forward, was that if there were an accreditation program, then registrars, if they wanted to be accredited, could only deal with those proxy services and not deal with unaccredited proxy and privacy services. And I agree with you. I'm not concerned that if the bad guys end up having their children be the registrants, there's probably nothing. There's very little that can be done about that. That's a different problem. But we're really talking about these major commercial services for the most part. It strikes me that there are costs to an accreditation program, which Wendy pointed out, and of course you could achieve the same objective and probably more quickly if you simply embodied the standards that you wanted these services to use in the contract, the RAA, and said registrars have to limit their the sale of proxy registrations to entities that meet those standards. Accreditation is really just kind of a shorthand for that, and it also gives the registrars some confidence that they can rely, you know, if it's an accredited service, they can rely on that and they'll have a safe harbor in a way. But you could do it the other way, which could be a lot more efficient in terms of getting us to that point. We probably should talk more about this whole question of who should be able to use a proxy service or a privacy service. And I'll just mention that there was a session here just a couple of hours ago where the preliminary results of another study by NORC commissioned by ICANN were disclosed. And I thought it was kind of interesting that they were trying to figure out what can we tell about the characteristics of registrants in the domain name system. And I mean, two points stood out for me. One is that there seems to be no statistically significant difference in the level of use of proxy services between legal persons and natural persons. In other words, individual companies or legal persons are just as likely to use proxy services as natural persons. So it's a little surprised to hear. And the other data point was that the rate, they looked at sites associated with these domain names. And I don't know all the methodology that they were using, but their conclusion was that the rate of potentially commercial uses of the domain name were actually higher for registrants that were using privacy and proxy services rather than those who did not. So it was kind of the opposite of what Susan was saying as far as the bright line, and this was a statistically significant difference. So that's our status quo now. Anybody can use these. They can do it for anything. And I appreciate the value of trying to address that, but I would say it's probably simpler and I think we should focus perhaps less on entry into the proxy system and more on exit from the proxy system. Entry into the proxy system, are you allowed to register, do a proxy registration? That depends on your status and who you are and so forth, and that's sometimes very difficult to ascertain. Could put a big burden on the service to ascertain that. Exit is when are you kicked out of the program, at least to the extent that your contact information is revealed to someone who's come in and shown that you're using the domain name in a harmful way. That depends on behavior, not status, and it should be easier to determine that rather than at the front end saying, gee, is this an individual? Is it a legal person? Are they doing something? Are they going to do something commercial? It's hard to answer those questions, but on the other end, what have they done or what has happened? How has the domain name been used? That should be easier to determine.
I'm seeing people to your right who look like they want to add something.
So I would disagree with the notion that ICANN should limit who can use privacy and proxy services. I don't believe that we can draw the line at an iota of commercial activity. There are numerous individual and nonprofit sites that support themselves using advertisements. There are lots of again, as a consumer protection matter, if it's up to the consumer to determine, does he want to do business with someone who identifies himself, or is he comfortable doing business on a basis that doesn't have that connection? I don't think ICANN is in a position to make that determination for all consumers. It's certainly not in a position to make that determination for all would-be speakers online. When are you? So I'll stop there and come back to other questions, since I see Bobby also interested in responding.
Thank you. Well, I, you know, to go on one of your earlier points, I really do think it is ICANN's role. ICANN is, this is your contract. You are the final arbiters. You're going to hear many people from many different industries, and I think the bottom line for ICANN is the safety and the security of the internet. And I think it's going to be, you know, I think it is your role to make that distinction and to make sure that all the players are who they say they are, and everyone is complying with the same rules and regulations and contract and everything else that goes along with it. It shouldn't be that just GoDaddy has to do what they need to do and no one else does what they need to do. There has to be a level playing field. I would agree with Facebook and Steve Metallitz insofar as there should be, not everyone should have the anonymity. You can't walk down the street and have the right not to be noticed. You know, if you're a business and you're engaging in legitimate business activities, why would you need to hide who you are? You have to file certificates of incorporation. These are things that you need to do. So why would you need to hide who you are on the internet and hide your domain names? So I think that is one thing that, you know, should be considered. And the other thing is criminals do use proxy services. We've done surveys in the FBI. We've had child exploitation cases, national security cases, consumer fraud, credit card fraud, botnet fraud, in which they have used proxy registration. So criminals will pay, and they will game the system if there are not the proper mechanisms in place.
So one of the things that I've heard that I think might be helpful is, you know, Steve called it the exit from being a user of a proxy service. And I think what we're really talking about is, when does the underlying customer's name and contact information get revealed, right? So I'm wondering, if any of you would like to sort of offer when you think that should be, and maybe, yeah, okay, James, great.
So, no, I actually agree on that. I think it's much easier, much cleaner to establish the terms and conditions under which you have abused your use of a proxy service and to kick them out and to perhaps standardize some of those practices. I think determining eligibility at the front end is not just problematic. I mean, it's just something I'm not comfortable with because it starts to divide folks into classes or based on use or intention. And, of course, people change their minds. They don't have ads up today or a PayPal donation box today, but they put one up tomorrow, or they take it down when they think someone's looking or something like that. So I think that what we have determined is that, you know, and I think this does frustrate. I'll be on the level. I think that this does frustrate the folks who would like to see more structure in this area, is that as the provider of this service, we establish the terms and conditions under which we will kick someone out of our service, of the use of our service. And I think that it's probably safe to say that law enforcement, intellectual property folks might want a greater say in those scenarios and put some more clear-cut rules in there. But I think that ultimately it comes down to some standardization, some consistency, but with the understanding that ultimately there needs to be discretion and judgment on the part of the service provider to say, no, I think that this is not a legitimate request to expose the personal information of someone. I understand you believe you have a claim and you believe that very strongly, but that doesn't translate into an obligation on me necessarily. Or no, I don't believe that. I do believe this is a law enforcement overreach in this area, in this particular scenario. And I think that this is something that should be reserved in a sort of a judgment area of the service provider. But ultimately, you know, as businesses, we're going to want to limit and minimize our risk exposure. You know, so if we believe that someone is a clear-cut case, I mean, they're gone. And by gone, what it means is we just cancel the proxy services and reinsert their what we want to call their original contact data into the Whois database, and that has the net effect of essentially kicking them out from the umbrella and putting them into the public service.
Go ahead, Susan.
Sorry. So I just would like to address the sort of the standardization, because if I go to GoDaddy, I know what to expect. I know pretty much when I'm going to get what I need from them. And they have a certain process for the specifying the information I need to provide. But that is not, you know, at all consistent across all the proxy privacy providers. And just within our own enforcement program, you know, I've identified 24 different proxy providers. I'm not sure how many there really are out there. I just know those I've identified. So, you know, when I go to Company X and say, this is trademark infringement, they're using Facebook in the domain name, and they're, you know, it's unauthorized use, it's confusing, here's our trademark registrations, you know, they'll all get pushbacks that are unbelievable. Well, a lot of times I get no response. Absolutely. You can fill out the form all day long, but it's not going anywhere. B, I get the response that bring me a court order. Okay, court order to get this site that is obviously infringing and most likely doing something criminal, you know, just to get the contact information, that doesn't fly. It's just not scalable. And then, you know, and there is a sort of a step down from that, the subpoena. And I have used the 3.7.7.3 hundreds of times in these requests when to push back. And sometimes that does give, you know, I get a response then, but having to figure out everybody's process to reveal information is just painful and extremely time-consuming. And in the meantime, they're taking money, and people are thinking they're doing business with Facebook.
Wendy, did you? Is there something you want to add?
Yeah.
I've got a lot of folks that I think are trying to get in on this, and I don't know how long you wanted us to just talk amongst ourselves, because I'm not. I know this is kind of more of an open-ended format, and I just wanted to mention that to the panelists. I'm willing to stand down and let folks kind of start chiming in from the.
So the idea was we'd have about 15 minutes at the end for sort of comments and questions. But, you know, if there's, I think, things that are sort of relevant to the discussion, maybe one of our staff people could walk around with a microphone and allow that.
While staff is walking
around, go ahead.
I'm going to just grab. We're not walking into uncharted territory in asking about the standards for reveal. And U.S. courts have had to consider this when asked for the identities of anonymous speakers in contexts online and off. And they've raised a pretty high bar that speakers are entitled to protections of their identities, because the shielding of identity is a value in itself that shouldn't be taken away without due process. And so in the online defamation context, John Doe suits brought against individuals posting to online message boards, the courts have said you have to show that you have a prima facie case, that you can show all of the elements of harm before you get the identity of the poster. And plenty of those suits have then been thrown out because somebody was trying to make a political case, was trying to unmask a political opponent, or somebody who was not engaged in unlawful activity. So I think users need those kinds of safeguards, and those kinds of safeguards that can come only from the independent and objective oversight of a court, not the service provider subject to all sorts of pressures, including how much is it going to cost me to stand up on behalf of a user.
So if I could just sort of push back a little bit, it sounds like what you're saying, though, is that the consumers have choices in the marketplace that would sort of maintain that standard of requiring a court order or a subpoena, and that's how they would protect themselves if they wanted that greater sense of privacy. Is that right?
I'm saying consumers should have that choice, and a privacy and proxy program that forced them into a lesser degree of protection by accrediting only proxies who would reveal on anything less than a court order isn't giving consumers the full range of choices they're entitled to.
Gotcha. Thank you. Why don't we go ahead with the questions out here?
Yeah, I just had a couple of comments on some of the earlier comments that were made during the discussion. The first is, I guess, the comments I think that Wendy made saying that consumer protection is not a mandate of the DNS and we should protect consumers somewhere else. And I'm a little uncomfortable with that statement. Obviously, in our discussions, we're considering the privacy implications of the policies that are developed here, and also ICANN, under its affirmation of commitment, is obliged to consider consumer protection with respect to the expansion of new GTLD. So I just wouldn't want to summarily dismiss the consumer protection component of the policies that we develop here, and so I just wanted to say that. And then secondly, I think also there was a statement that who is poorly suited to be a business lookup directory, and that's because the system is not properly administered and there is inaccurate data. If properly administered, it would actually be ideally suited for a lookup as a consumer. If I'm on a website and they don't have their information there and I'm about to buy something, if I am educated about the existence of Whois, and I go to it and I see they're really registered in India or somewhere else, and then I can make that determination as a consumer whether or not I want to proceed. But I think it actually is quite useful to a consumer who's knowledgeable about its existence and how the system operates. I also think that I think there was discussion about whether or not ICANN should even sort of be pursuing this program, and I think you know, these proxy provisions are in the registrar accreditation agreement. There are provisions about Whois in the agreement. There are provisions about the registration data. So to me, it sort of is a non-issue. Like, it clearly falls within the framework that ICANN has created in terms of administering its contracts and the type of and the scope of those contracts. And I just also wanted to support, I guess, along the lines of can this be used for consumers to empower themselves online, I would support the comments I think that Susan made from Facebook, which was that these commercial actors, these businesses, should not necessarily be allowed to hide their data. And so I think we certainly recognize that there is value in the proxy and privacy services to do just that, protect people's privacy. But if you're online and you're a business, I think that's a situation where if you're talking about the entry point to who should be eligible for these services, that is a bright line that perhaps we could draw.
And I'm sorry, I should have asked you to identify yourself for the record. Would you mind doing that?
Hi, my name is Chandra Watson.
Thank you.
I work for the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, but all of my comments are my own. They are not on behalf of any commissioner or the commission.
Thank you, Chandra. We're there. Thanks.
Mark Trachtenberg, excuse me, with Winston & Strawn and part of the IPC. I would like to agree with Chandra's very personal comments that do not reflect the position of the FTC. But, you know, I guess two comments for things that Wendy said. You know, one, when you talk about the high standards the courts have for revealing the identity of people, I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about here. We're talking about reasonable evidence of actionable harm. You know, things like trademark infringement, if you can reasonably show that there is harm, you know, courts will reveal the identity. And, you know, the trademark owner or even people in the public who want to know shouldn't have the high burden of going to file a case in court and getting a subpoena. Additionally, you mentioned earlier that, you know, Whois is poorly suited to protect consumers, and there's plenty of other options they could use. I would like to know what these other options are, because I haven't seen any of them, and there's nothing better than Whois, even in the poor shape that Whois is in right now. So if you could tell me what those other great options are in the marketplace for consumers to find out more information about a website, I would love to know, because then we can use them in my firm.
Sure. Websites that self-identify and go through accreditation or display address information on the site offer consumers those options. I don't think it's not ICANN's business to run the Better Business Bureau. It's not ICANN's business to run the corporate registries. There are other places that those things are done. We have there are certificate authorities who do identification and charge lots of money. Some of them do it well, some of them do it poorly. But all of those offer opportunities to authenticate the identity of those with whom you're doing business. When it's worth it to a consumer to find that authentication, they can do so. When it's not, because they just want to see something on a website, they should have those lower cost options.
That's not who we're talking about. We're talking about everybody else, all the bad actors who basically are putting up a storefront or putting up a fake Facebook site or putting up anything else. And those people have the opposite goal of not being identified. And so there's got to be some way in order for consumers to protect themselves and for businesses to protect themselves to identify who is behind that website.
And the opportunity is consumer education to look for marks of verified identity before doing business. It's not everybody should identify yourselves because you might want to do business.
Well,
it's
I didn't
rather
think about that. We should just educate all the consumers. Okay.
Yep.
That's a great solution.
Well,
Can I just respond real quickly? You mentioned something because we did find a parallel, which was that you can create anonymous Facebook pages. And I think that I'm not picking on Facebook. I'm actually defending Facebook. So are proxy service providers. They're private companies, and they can set up their own terms of service under which they will decide who they do business with and under what terms they will cancel that service. So I think it's very similar in that regard.
Because, yes, I am sure there's a way to circumvent everything. Right? That's what people just sit out there trying to do that all day long. But you report that anonymous page to me, and it's going to be gone, right? You report it to the company, it is gone. So if I report a proxy registration that's doing business without the appropriate trademark use, it sits there. It might just have just enough of our trademarks to think, oh, yes, this must be affiliated with Facebook. But I can't do anything.
No, what I'm getting at is that Facebook makes the determination when I, as an outside third party, contact Facebook and say, I don't like this Facebook page.
Right.
I want to know who's behind it. You make the determination of if whether my request is legitimate or not. You don't presume I have a right to know who's behind that Facebook page.
No, I do not. But if you report the page, then we review it. And we do take those same standards that you an evaluation process. I'm not.
I was defending us both.
Yeah, it didn't seem.
It was
that
a kumbaya
way.
Moment. But I was drawing an analogy, I think, to.
I think this is a good discussion, and I think, when we look to, what's going to be, the makeup of an accreditation program. I think what we really want to know is, how do we set the standards for revealing? And also, I think another really big question is, what's the due process involved? And that's sort of the theme that I'm hearing from everyone in one way or another is, let's say the proxy program denies the reveal. Should there be some kind of an appeal right? Or let's say somebody has their privacy subject to being revealed. Should they have some sort of a right to stop that? I'd be interested to hear if the people on the panel or if there are others in the room who might have thoughts about where should the bar be set? And I think that when we look at it as ICANN, we're saying, there's going to be some minimum threshold where we say a proxy must at least do this. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to make every proxy exactly conform to the same practices. It's going to set some minimum bar. So I'm wondering if you guys have any insight into, where should the minimum bar be where we say, in this circumstance, every proxy should reveal? Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
I mean, I think that's going to take some discussion about the different types of abuses that we're talking about because it's going to be different. We've had some of this actually, and we've made some proposals in the past, looking at the different types of abuses that are prevalent. I think one thing that needs to be made very clear is to address the problem that Susan mentioned, which is proxy services that now say only if you present us with a court order will we reveal this. And I think that needs to be spelled out in the I think it should be spelled out in the RAA, but it certainly should be spelled out in the any accreditation standards, which then registrars would be obliged to only use services that met those standards. And it should spell out that you don't require legal process for revealing. Again, the point that Susan was making was this is not a takedown of a site. This is not a pursuing someone. This is simply finding out who it is that has registered that site, providing the information that basically the normal expectation would be in the Whois database anyway. So that's the I think that's the important aspect there. And also there's another part of this is, as I understand from James, you're kicked out of the program entirely, and that circumstance means everybody sees your data. And I know some providers will not do that, but will just reveal it to the requesting party, which means that if you've violated party X's rights, then party X is going to be able to find out who you are, but party Y and Z, who don't really have a beef against you, would not. Okay, so I mean that's a maybe a bit of a nuance, but the other thing I think that's important here. As an accreditation standard, when we get that information, we want to have at least a higher assurance than we have today that the information is accurate. So we've talked a lot about who is verification requirements for all registrations, and that's obviously a bone of contention in the RAA negotiations. But it strikes me that at least for those that are in a proxy or privacy service where someone is paying for it anyway, and you can build this into the cost structure, there should be a verification requirement for that data. So that once it's ultimately in a circumstance where it is ultimately revealed, you have a higher level of confidence that it will be valid. Because I think some of the concerns that arise from a blanket requirement, if you will, of who is data verification, are much less so in the proxy and privacy area because it's already a value added service, if you will.
Wendy?
Conducting this entire conversation as though the only bad actors are on the side of those hiding behind using privacy and proxy services. Unfortunately, there are bad actors trying to pierce the veil of anonymity that legitimate speakers are benefiting from. If only all trademark claimants were solid in the assertion of their rights and asserted them only against infringers, if only all of the claimants of defamation or other harms were absolutely right. But since that's not the case, that's why where we need courts as independent verification and validation of those claims. It's only by going through a court that we, the public, get the assurance that, in fact, there is a valid claim. Within ICANN, we often forget that. We often look only at the bad actors on one side, and unfortunately, there are people who will abuse the process to get identities as well.
Thanks, Wendy. We're now to that point where we're going to take questions officially, so if Marge, if you'd like to go around and...
My name is Stefan Legner. I'm with InternetX, PSI USA. PSI USA is our accredited registrar. InternetX is a registrar in Europe. And I want to make the following point. Mike, you presented in the beginning showing what kinds of what is privacy and proxy service and who offers privacy and proxy service. What has not been presented explicitly are all the legitimate reasons why anybody would use a privacy or a proxy service. We all know that there are actors on the market who operate on the gray or on the black side of law. They want to intend to do illegal things. However, there are a lot of very good reasons to use such a service. And I would like to see written down all these legitimate reasons why to do so. And if ever there is any measure proposed or even decided to do, there should be clearly seen what of the legitimate reasons are killed by this measurement. And Bobby, to you, why should a company, an official company, not want to have a domain name seen with its name? I look at future marks, names of cars, names of products. A company has its marketing department. They want to register this names, but they don't want to have this name seen as some of their property because this reveals their plans. So there might be very, very legitimate reasons to do so, and this should not be killed. Definitely not.
Yeah, of course.
And I said that earlier. There are legitimate reasons. I haven't outlined them, but yes, Facebook is a company. There are times when we're going to launch something. Usually somebody figures out before they tell me, but I will register domain names with a proxy. What I will never do as the domain manager for Facebook and when I was at eBay and PayPal is allow the site to go live with a proxy registration. If the site's going live, once it's live, then I flip it over. So what I'm saying is, yes, there's legitimate use, but if you are doing business, I should be able to know who you are. And you should know who I am. I mean, the EU, there's all kinds of requirements that we do not have in the U.S. to have information on your site. But I can show you a bunch of websites that are based in the EU that have no contact information but my own, but Facebook Inc.'s. And it's like, no, that's not Facebook. I can attest to that. But nobody else is going to know that. So.
Thanks, Susan. I just want to note, I think it's kind of a process consideration. I think that was a really good suggestion that we look at, you know, how every, you know, potential use that we're aware of proxy programs would be affected. So we'll definitely take that back. Thanks.
Hi, my name is, I think I'd rather submit my comment under privacy, and I'm going to hide my badge here. My name is Steve Levy. I'm with Fairwinds Partners. Specifically directed to Wendy again, you talked about consumers educating themselves. You also talked about that the courts should be the arbiters of what should and should not be revealed. It sounds like you're espousing a very free market sort of concept, and I guess one of my questions is, do you feel, for example, that in the U.S. the Deceptive Trade Practices Act should be repealed? Do you feel that the Truth in Lending Act should be repealed and simply allow consumers to be on their own and sort of try to navigate their own way? Or do you feel that these acts perhaps validly, in the interest of protecting consumers, validly take certain matters out of the courts and make protections more automatic rather than requiring people to avail themselves of court protection each time?
So I mean, you're free to answer. I think, you know, we could also sort of take that as more of a rhetorical question. I mean, I think that, I don't think anybody disputes that, you know, there are valid reasons for consumer protections, but your point is taken.
Thank you. A couple of quick points. As a trademark attorney, what always upsets me is to see privacy and proxy services that do not respond. So I rather have a responsive service than inaccurate who is where I can't reach anybody. And I think we need to make this responsiveness work. Nonetheless, I do think that there are good reasons to have privacy and proxy services. I've seen numerous cases where, let's say, a domain name was owned by the owner of the business, but that person didn't want to go to have its private address go public. So this might be a speciality for the European market, but as you said, and I'm thankful for the remark, we have quite detailed information duties in our distance selling provisions. And talking about consumer trust, these are much better than looking at who is. So as a European, I doubt whether who is the solution. I sometimes look at fora where people discuss e-commerce sites, and the first question that people ask is, do they have a proper imprint on the site? So people don't use Whois, but they look at the website, whether the business is disclosing their information. And so I think that's the way that would be advisable to go, rather than trying to make Whois work, which I think will fail ultimately, because the bad guys will they will get ways surrounding it. If I were a bad actor, you would only find perfectly valid Whois information. Only the person that's in there doesn't know about it.
Thanks. Next question or comment?
I would just say that... Oh, Mark Trachtenberg. I would just say that I definitely agree that there's numerous reasons why people would want to hide their identity, and a number of them are legitimate, so I don't have a problem with that. I'm not suggesting that those things be killed at all, and they're definitely... with any system, needs to be protections. Now, obviously, some good or bad actors on both the trademark side and the, you know, squatter infringer side are going to abuse the system. There's no system that is totally immune from abuse, and that's just the world we live in and what we have to deal with. But that doesn't mean there shouldn't be a system. But the other point I would make is, you know, just even with regard to relying on courts, a problem that we're seeing more and more is that these proxy services are going overseas, so they're offshore, and they're not responding at all to any requests. Some require you to send an email only, but they don't accept postal mail. Others require you to send postal mail only, but no email. And so even if you were to go to court and you had obvious actionable harm, you had obvious trademark abuse, obvious spam or fraud or malware, whatever it is, the court has no power to order this proxy provider who's overseas to do anything to reveal the identity. So the only choice you have now is to, you know, file, you know, possibly UDRP if there's a trademark in the, you know, in the domain name, but then you have to wait for the UDRP, or you, now you can file an ACPA if the trademark's in the domain name, but now you have to go through the expense of filing a lawsuit in federal court, get your default judgment. It still takes a lot of time. And if there's no trademark in the domain name, well, then again, like, your only option is to file suit in federal court, and that's not really a great system. So there needs to be some protection built in, and I think accreditation is one way to do it, so that these proxy services have to be accredited. They have to be responsive to complaints of harm, and if they're not, they lose their accreditation, and no one can use that service anymore.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I think those are good points, and I would just put out, and one of the things that Susan and I discussed on the WHOIS review team was that, you know, maybe it's time for you guys to start taking some scalps. You know, I mean, because if you're having that much difficulty reaching a proxy service provider, then I don't know what the distinction is. The bad actor, the proxy versus the registrant, I think they're one and the same at a certain point. If you're having that much of a difficulty just getting responsiveness from them, you know, I think it's the same situation where if I purchased something online and they took my money and charged my credit card and didn't deliver anything, I start to care less about, you know, who that person is. And they're just a bad actor, you know, at that point. And I think that you can kind of paint the proxy and the registrant with the same brush, because a legitimate service provider, I believe, won't engage in that kind of stuff. Just my thoughts. And I thought, you know, maybe start taking some heads, you know, certainly will drive the good guys to my business, which is what I want. So,
hi, my name is Desi Valli, and I come from India. I represent a company, Net for India, which is a registrar as well as an ISP in India. I just want to, you know, during the discussion, my observation and interpretation is looking like most of the discussions are based on U.S. and European Union laws, but there are laws which are beyond these regions, which needs to be considered when such policies are drafted. One of the incidents which recently happened in India was that there was a government order to ISPs to block a website. As per the agreement which is signed by the service providers with the government, we are supposed to block that website. However, Bharti Airtel, the largest ISP in India, was penalized by the court for blocking that particular website without an instruction from the court, because the IT Act says that the judgment of a site being doing anything wrong is to be decided by the court. Till then, the site provider is just an accused. So when it comes to the proxy example, the problem what we face in India and that region is, as per the IT Act, which is modified recently, there is a clause which defines intermediaries, and it defines who all constitute the members of the intermediaries, and which includes the domain registrars, which includes ISPs, which includes content providers, etc. In such an environment, if we are not able to provide the rightful information which is sought by the law enforcement authorities or by the court, then the intermediaries are considered to be in connivance with the bad people. So in our opinion, there should be a definite in a description on what is privacy, what is private registrations, by ICANN, and there should be a definite policy on when to disclose and how to disclose and who to disclose the information. The bigger concern what we have is, for instance, 85% of the traffic from India goes out of India. So if information sought is lying outside India, still I'm being considered as an intermediary being an access service provider in India. So, but I do not have any access or information of those particular websites. I can't block because the court has to decide, and nobody is ready to go to the court because the site is completely outside India. But we are in trouble because the LEAs will be forcing us to take actions, or the government will ask us to give more information on that. So when we are defining these policies, how do we define the policies on disclosing information of the private registration between geographies? That's not understood in the discussion. So if I as a registrar, can I ask another registrar currently, even if I ask, nobody will be disclosing. So if I can put in conditions in the RAA, which will clearly define when a registrar need to disclose this information, especially if it is between different regions and different geography.
Thank you. I think you've raised a couple of really good points there, and I think we do need to be really sensitive to the sort of the when we're crossing jurisdictional lines in developing the program. Tim, did you want to add this question?
Yeah, we've got a question from online, and I think we're going to probably have to make this the last one because we're out of time.
Okay. Well, Alan is in the queue next.
Okay, but okay. Carolyn Chacoin asks a question, poses a question for Wendy, and I know you briefly answered it online, but I think for the benefit of everyone here, she says, do you envision there can be a proposal other than the status quo that can address the legitimate interests on both sides of the fence, which necessarily would require compromise on both sides? And if so, what would that look like? So I don't know if Wendy wants. It was a question for Wendy.
Right. I'm sorry, I didn't really know whether you wanted to finish the queue first and then come back to us. What I said online, I think best practices among self-developed among the providers, not compliance creep from ICANN.
Thanks, Wendy. And so, in the interest of getting our last few questions, I'm gonna not have a wrap up, and I'm just gonna let us get the last few questions. And so, here's Alan.
It's not really a question; it's a statement. My crystal ball tells me ICANN is likely to do something as a result of all this, if only because of the recommendation from the review team. Could you go back to the slide just before discussions and questions? I'd like to call your attention to what I hope is an embarrassing typo. The last option of doing something is ICANN created a program in consultation with registrars. I hope in a multi-stakeholder model the consultation will be with maybe a few other parties also.
Thanks, Alan. And that was actually something that I did mention when I was describing this slide that, you know, from staff's perspective, we definitely want to get all stakeholders' input in this. But from the contract perspective, what registrars want is to make sure that they're consulted. And so that's why that's a provision in the contract.
Words on slides live for a long time. And what you've said there is not acceptable to some of us other stakeholders.
That phrase is used in a couple different places already in the RAA, Alan.
No, thanks, Alan. That's point taken.
My point is probably a little smaller than everyone else's, but it has to do specifically with phishing and malware issues. And it's a little bit more towards the people who are actually using the Privacy Protect services for the legitimate services that do pass on the emails to these people and are getting in contact with them, with other people trying to contact them. It's great, but for websites that don't have commercial value and don't have contact information on these are personal websites from people, and then they have their websites hacked and used for phishing or malware purposes, and now legitimate companies trying to get that information down cannot get in contact with them because these non-accredited Privacy Protect companies are not passing on the information. So now they are now being compliant with these phishing people without even really realizing it, and it's becoming a really big issue because these companies are not passing on the emails. And now eventually the ISP may become involved and may take down the site for them or may get in contact with them through other ways, but that can take days, that can take weeks, that can take months, as opposed to directly contacting the domain owner and having the content removed immediately.
I think that's a very important point, that sometimes the registrants aren't the bad guy, the registrants are the victims. Yep. So, and this does stand in the way of redress.
So thank you for that, and I want to say thank you to all of our panelists and all of the people who are here who contributed to this discussion. I promised I wasn't going to wrap up, but I do want to say this is the beginning, not the end of this dialogue. So I really appreciate everything that's been contributed so far, and we plan to come back to you for more, the entire community, that is. Thank you.